Blog Talk Radio.
It's 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Tuesday night, and you are listening to The Ooze with your host, Jason Sorrell, and usually Rotten Biohazard's here, but Rotten hasn't called in yet tonight, and not sure what the deal is. Perhaps like last weekend or whatever it was when I couldn't get to the phone on time. He's talking to a relative or something. Something's going on. I'm sure he'll call in a few moments because this is a show that he was particularly interested in doing. You want to do a show talking about zombies, and I'm not sure exactly how Rodden was going to be looking at that, what angle he was going to take. He's going to be talking about the upcoming zombie apocalypse that everybody's concerned about, and there are a few things in nature that suggest, you know, there might be that possibility, or if you were talking, wanted to think about zombies from another angle, like from horror films or something of that nature. But we'll get into all that tonight if Rodden calls in, and if anybody wants to call in. The phone number is 347-989-1371. If you want to talk about zombies, your favorite zombie film, whether or not you think a zombie apocalypse is a possibility, what suggestions you have for your zombie apocalypse strategy or what have you, go ahead and give us a call, and we'll spend the next hour, you know, taking those calls. If Rotten Biohazard calls in or if you want to call in, if Rotten doesn't call in because really this is kind of his show topic, if he doesn't want to call in or he doesn't actually make it in tonight, then I'll just kind of riff on some other stuff after I finish my little bit on zombies because I really don't have much to say on the topic. I mean, other than, you know, it's a pop cultural phenomenon. Everybody knows what the zombie is. Everybody's, you know, there's kind of a vibe. There's kind of a buzz. It's almost cool to be into zombies. It's almost become its own kind of internet meme in many ways, the idea of a zombie. So that's kind of out there, you know, so much so that the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, put together some sort of a website or web page on their official website. The Office of Public Health Preparedness and Response wanted to use the idea of being prepared for the zombie apocalypse as a way to motivate people to be prepared for actual disasters that might occur. Basically, it was the thinking of the people there at the CDC that if you were prepared for a zombie apocalypse, well, then you'd be prepared for, you know, a hurricane or a tornado, a fire, or any kind of other natural disaster that might occur. So they put together what is it's a pretty cool little webpage, and they have this comic book now, which you can actually read full comic book on their website. I guess you can order a copy of it. And it's accessible as a PDF if you wanted to download it. But it's a comic book that kind of plays on that idea of, you know, being prepared for a natural disaster with the backdrop being the rise of the living dead. So check that out. It's on the CDC website, www.cdc.gov, something that the government, you know, is actually kind of cool with. I was about to jump on the line here and pull our caller up. I thought maybe it was Rodden, but no, it's our 213 listener. The 213 listener is going to be, I'm pretty sure, pretty disappointed here, say about next week. I'd say about after next Sunday, they're going to be pretty upset because they seem to be a loyal listener of the Ooze. But we'll get to all that. That's coming down the road. But anyways, so that was one thing I wanted to say about zombies. And I'm a fan of zombie films. I enjoy zombie movies. I've done some I have some Zombie Girls. I have a Dead Girls Don't Say No t-shirt that's available right now at www.creativebodystudios.com. Go to the main page, and you'll see it when you click open the actual main page. It's right there. One of the more popular stickers on our website is the Dead Girls Don't Say No sticker, different design, same concept. There's an I Love Brains t-shirt now that's available on the website. So pretty popular stuff. And let me see if I can pull up the blog real quick. I did a blog if you want to see all the little zombie images I've done. When people have their birthdays, at least this year, people on Facebook, when they have a birthday and they post on Facebook that, you know, today's their birthday or whatever, they've got that option so that it automatically notifies their friends that today is their birthday. What I do is I send them a little e-card of some of my artwork that features a zombie girl, and she's in birthday gear. She's got the birthday hat, the little thing you blow on or whatever, and she's topless, and there's a brain on a plate that has a slice cut out of it like a cake. There's candles sticking out of the brain. And so people kind of dig that when they get that on their wall for on Facebook. So if you're not a Facebook friend of mine and you'd like to see that kind of thing come up on your birthday on your wall, go ahead and check me out, Sorrel Art, on Facebook, and we'll get you added on. And you'll get to see that picture on your wall when you have your birthday. Obviously, I'm riffing on this because all right, Rotten Biohazard is here, so we'll go ahead and bring him on the line. All right, Rod, what's going on tonight, man?
Hey, man, so sorry for calling in late. Time kind of went sort of haywire, and yeah, you know how that is.
Right on. No, regular thing here on the U's that one of us is always calling in late or getting in right under the gun or whatever, so no worries. So we're doing the zombie episode tonight, and as I was riffing about it when before you called in, I didn't do a lot of research for this. I have my own take on the whole zombie thing, and
There's really no research needed. We go into the film, we could go into the modern, you know, day zombies, even in modern culture or gaming, whatever you want to go with, man.
Okay.
You know what's one thing, though, I always thought really kind of strange, though? Well, let me give you
okay.
a little piece of trivia. Who was the first one to actually make the zombies cannibalistic in film?
You know, my first instinct is to say George Romero.
Yes.
But I don't know if that was the case.
No, actually, pretty much was that. He was the first one to actually make the zombies into these bloodthirsty, you know, brain-eating, you know, ghouls, really.
Was it George Romero?
Yeah.
Okay, right on.
Do you know what all zombie movies were about before that, though?
Usually, like, if I think of, like, White Zombie or what have you, it was usually just a reanimated, freshly dead corpse that was just a slave. So it's just kind of an automaton being controlled by somebody.
Yeah, from the 20s up, it basically had a lot to do with the voodoo culture of Haiti. And
right.
That's basically where the first original type of zombies really came into modern film, for at least that time, was that mentality of, you know, slaves of voodoo culture. And then later on, also, that also was kind of a strange little parallel with a lot of things that were going on in just society with, you know, still having a certain bit of slavery going on. And it was also meant to kind of be a discussion on film of the times that were going on, basically.
Right on. I think I just mentioned White Zombie with Bela Lugosi. That might have been one of the earliest horror films featuring a zombie. So, yeah, it's been around for a while. I think White Zombie came out in the 1930s.
That
really kind of when zombie kind of kicked off in the American culture was during the 1930s and hasn't stopped since. And it has transformed, as you pointed out. George Romero introduced the idea of, you know, zombies being, you know, cannibalistic, or at least, you know, they eat living flesh or whatever, they eat living humans. And then, from what I understand, you know, George Romero, of course, did the sequel, Day of the Dead, or Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead, and I think he did another one. I think he's done five so far of the zombie films. He had a partner during the whole Night of the Living Dead production, and the partner actually claimed the rights to the Living Dead kind of title. So Night of the Living Dead, that's why Dawn of the Dead isn't Dawn of the Living Dead, is Dawn of the Dead. So Return of the Living Dead was actually Romero's partner. And if Romero was the first one to introduce the idea of cannibalistic corpses, this guy was the first one to introduce the idea that they actually prefer to eat the brains of the living being. Romero always has been kind of ambiguous as to, you know, the cause of the zombie apocalypse, whereas the other guy was very clear that it was, you know, this agent created by the U.S. military that was supposed to be used to fight in Vietnam.
In fact, a lot of the reports I've seen, interviews that were done with Romero, a lot of them were, especially as Day, Dawn, and Night, if you look at just the films themselves and look at the times in which they were created, a lot of it was basically social commentary for the time period. You look at, for instance,
right.
Night of the Living Dead, you had this really pasty white chick, and you had this black guy. The black men at that time were considered to be very brutish, with him being kind of this emotionally reserved character was really unheard of. And of course, in the remake, they made him be more of the brutish for the time period we're in now. And then if you look at Dawn of the Dead, it was a sort of a slap in the face of commercialism culture with the malls and everything else. That's why he made that film, basically. It was basically to condemn the culture that we had at the time. Going from the 60s of free love, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, to basically becoming completely pacified in the 70s and 80s.
Right on. So you could go further than, I guess, to say that Day of the Dead was a commentary on the military-industrial complex.
Yes.
Because that's what's focused on there. And then Land of the Dead was about politics and class warfare. And the other one is like the Zombie Diaries or something. I don't know. I haven't seen that one. And I'm a zombie fan. I'm a Romero fan.
He's come up with quite a few films in the last maybe 4 or 5 years. I think maybe 3 or 4, to be honest with you.
That sounds right. I think he rattled off a whole bunch of them right in a row. And I know they were kind of a departure from. While they were set in the same kind of, backdrop, the zombie apocalypse occurred, they were kind of a departure from the series in that instead of, being a follow-up to Land of the Dead, the Zombie Diaries was, set back more when the whole thing started. I haven't actually checked them out. Not all of them, not beyond Land of the Dead. My daughter and I, my eldest daughter and I, actually went to see Land of the Dead in the theaters. That's how dedicated we were
nice.
Way back when. And I have Return of the Living Dead. Well, of course, I have Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead here. But Return of the Living Dead and Return of the Living Dead 3. I don't even bother watching the second one. But Return of the Living Dead, the original, was just pop. Just total, kids and, hilarious. But
was that the one with the chick with the pink hair and the graveyard stripping with very nice
trash?
Back?
Absolutely. That's right. Trash was awesome. And you got the tar zombie in that one. The idea that zombie deep brain. So I mean, that had such an impact on our culture that when anybody thinks about zombies, they think brains.
Also end up with your first really talking zombies as well, which was really kind of unheard of within the genre as well.
Right. And it was kind of creepy when they pulled the it was a female corpse, totally emasculated. They got her on the slab in the mortician's the mortician's building or whatever, the mortuarium, and they're asking her what the deal is, and she's actually communicating with them about what's going on. It was just creepy. And then, of course, the love story of Return of the Living Dead 3. It was funny. Return of the Living Dead 2 kind of went in this weird direction. Return of the Living Dead had, trash running around completely naked.
Yeah.
They talked they talk a lot of shit about Trash wearing some sort of prosthetic over her her naughty bits. But that actress has actually appeared nude in other films. So if there's some question as to whether or not, you know, they just want to say that to make sure that they kind of protect their rating as it is right now, rather than getting probably a stricter rating in this day and age.
Well, shit, man. One of the scenes towards right after the rain had fallen in that film, and that toxic chemical from them burning the one body fell. After she ends up getting bitten by all those dead men in the graveyard, there's a scene to where she's walking out of the graveyard gates. It's really kind of foggy, and you could see her full frontal.
Right, right. Well, there's a scene where she's dancing on the tombstone, and she actually takes off the crotch piece of her shorts.
Yeah, you don't get a really good shot of the badge at that point.
Right, you don't get a really good shot, but the shot you're talking about, yeah, it's a pretty good shot. And then in three, the teenage girl.
That was such an emo-ish piece of shit. Jesus.
Oh, you think so?
Yes. Oh, for crying out loud. I mean, what's the last thing they do? They both sit in the cremation booth and basically burn each other alive. Jesus Christ.
Well, it was the untamed melody of zombie films, basically. It was exactly that, but also very punk rock. I mean, this chick, she has to staff herself with different implements to fight off the urge to just kill. So she's at one point in the movie, she gets all, you know, pierced up and everything, and her shirt's all tore up and everything. And of course, now that was actually a prosthetic. But to that actress's credit, she appears topless and bottomless earlier in the film, in the sex scene.
Yes.
With her male counterpart there. The fourth one was about the military. One of the doctors from the third film actually trying to use the zombies to power these biomechanical automatons, basically.
Yes.
So that they were, and you see them, I think, in the third film actually hooking up one of the zombies into this kind of rig. As a matter of fact, they do.
Yeah, the black guy, wasn't it?
Right. Right. And I forget the guy's name is, but he's in this rig. Well, the fourth movie, they actually, you know, they've got them all in the rig. And then, of course, I guess the fifth one is they're using the drug to get high, basically. Kids are using the drug to get high. And, What's that?
There weren't really any zombies in the fifth one, were there?
I don't know, because I thought that they – I thought – and I've only read the story. I actually haven't seen the film, but I thought, according to the story I read, that the more of the drug they ingested, the more zombie they became until, you know, there was a full conversion. Whether they actually died or not and came back from the dead, I don't know. So there's a lot of zombie films out there. If you want to see some really fucked up, not necessarily hard to watch because it's graphic or gory or anything like that, but
wait, zombie
hard to
porn?
Watch because the plot lines, yeah, zombie films. There's an Italian director. His series is called Zombie, and I think it's Zombie or something ridiculous like that.
I think it was just, wasn't it just Zombie with no E at the end?
Yeah, it might be, or it might just be Zombi. But it's an Italian director. He's done a whole series of these sexploitation films, basically. It's like, how many chicks can we get to be completely naked, let us spatter pig guts all over them or whatever? It's pretty ridiculous.
And then, of course, we now have, you know, zombie porn, which is quite just out there and odd as hell to watch.
Right, and speaking of zombie porn, Dead Girl, if that's your thing. Dead Girl's a pretty sick film about just that. Have you seen that film?
She had a bush.
Yeah. A couple of high school kids find it's a zombie who's been trapped or who's been stuck in an asylum basement, locked away for who knows how long. And they find her. She's all strapped down. She's all tied down and completely naked. And teenage boys do to her what teenage boys do. And it's pretty fucked up. More fucked up, in my opinion, than a film that came out around the same time, which has nothing to do with zombies, Human Centipede. I thought Human Centipede was more hype than it actually turned out to be.
Necromantic.
Go ahead, dude.
And Necromantic.
Oh,
another,
yeah. That's a cool film.
Yes.
But yeah, man, zombie flicks. Now, if you want to see a zombie flick that's kind of cool in an artistic way, I Zombie was the title of it, and it was actually put out by Fangoria, helped produce this thing. And the film starts out kind of hokey. You got this British guy; he's a botanist. He's going out to study this fungal growth. This huge, you know, lynching or something like that that's out in some English pasture or whatever. And he gets out there, and he gets to the field he's supposed to check things out at, and this woman's coming toward him, and she looks kind of dazed and confused, like there's a problem. He's like, you know, he sees her, lady, can I help you and everything else? He's kind of goofy, and, you know, everything okay? And she gets to him, and she looks kind of panicked. She's having trouble speaking, and then she just bites into him, all right? And, of course, she's a zombie, and he just became infected. Being a scientist, he begins to chronicle his transformation into a zombie. He's able to maintain enough, you know, cognitive ability to, you know, write about, you know, how he's feeling really sick. He's got these weird appetites. He's, you know, these cramps, certain things are going on. And even after, you know, his heart stopped and everything else, he still, you know, keeps chugging along. He's, you know, about attacking people, struggling with, you know, how he can't. He can't be around his girlfriend. He can't be around his family anymore. And he's really alone. One night, to deal with his loneliness, he's jerking off one night. And as he's jerking off, because he's falling apart, basically, as he's jerking off, he takes his dick right off his body.
Oh, dude. Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm sorry, man. After that, I would have to be going out munching on some people, man. If I have to, you know, sit there losing that, I'm definitely going out munching on something. Shit.
So, yeah, pretty fucked up. But yeah, and then I Married a Zombie was a really shitty movie. Zombieland, I dug just because it was, you know, it was funny.
Oh no, that movie. Oh God, no.
Why didn't you like Zombieland?
Dude, I had so many people who were like, oh, like, that movie was amazing, it was hilarious, and I sat there drunk trying to watch it, and I just couldn't actually find the humor in it. I really couldn't. I couldn't even find where it was the spectacular thing that was being, you know, proposed that it was supposed to be. I didn't see it.
See, I wouldn't say it was amazing. I wouldn't say it was hilarious. I thought it was a funny film, in my opinion. I dig Woody Harrelson pretty much in almost anything he's been in. I thought him funny. Bill Murray was just being Bill Murray. That was kind of cool. The kid going over the rules, you know, cardio. I thought that was hilarious. And then, of course, I was able to introduce my kids to Metallica because Metallica is part of that soundtrack. So, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't get into that movie, man. It was one of those films that maybe my humor has changed over the years where I need more dry kind of British humor. I'm not sure, but I just couldn't get into it.
Yeah, it was idiotic humor. It was definitely that. But, yeah, zombie, and I'm sure they'll produce more. There'll be no end to the zombie flicks, to the different spin on zombies.
They're actually looking at do you remember that one, actually? That was, that was from the, I want to say, 80s. What was it, early 80s? Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember watching that one back in the day.
Glam and big hair.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of zombie films, man.
Yeah.
I also kind of, also liked a lot with the new Romero flicks. They kind of took on that first-person aspect to them, to where it wasn't the characters. It was more one guy filming, and it was that whole first-person shooting. I really love that. I really got into the films that were like that. For instance, Cloverfield, another one that had that kind of aspect to it as well that I really liked.
Right on. Yeah, and everybody really took a shit on Cloverfield. Like, I think it's Zombie Diaries you're talking about with Romero. Everybody, the critics and everybody took a big shit on Cloverfield for whatever reason. And I thought it was a decent film. I agree with you. That it was, I mean, there was enough action going on and everything else. I think for a lot of people, the ending was such a downer for a lot of people.
Yeah.
They get wiped out. They get killed. And I guess what's like a lot of people miss right at the beginning of the film, you actually see whatever it is falling into the ocean.
But
the Cloverfield, that they have that first, you know, that first person perspective, which I'm trying to think of what movies also have the same perspective, going off the kind of zombie talk, like the Blair Witch Project is probably the most, you know, most famously have that going on for it. And then it became, you know, artsy to do it too. You know, let's, what we'll do is we'll just take out a cheap camera and give it to the actors and let them film themselves, and we'll make millions. Okay.
Paranormal Activity is another one that had that kind of angle to it to some degree.
Right on. Right on. So, the zombie apocalypse, man, obviously it's been well thought out and well explored in fiction. How likely is it in your mind as a possibility?
Well, it's actually, oddly enough, kind of looking at this, one kind of parasite generally starts off in rats, then goes over to cats, and then in people, because of, well, we all know those damn Asians, man, damn Asians. But basically what this parasite does, it gets into the rat's brain and actually forces the rat to be eaten by the mouse, forces it to go where the cats are, and it gets in the food supply from there, of course. And also, there's a couple other ones, actually, that have that kind of same psychoactive property to them, whether it be just an illness, whether it be, as I said, a, you know, parasite that was in the rat's brain. It's different things like that. There's actually a couple of them, like four or five, I guess it is. They have that kind of quality to the zombie, yeah.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different parasites out there. There's one that affects ants, and the ants will go out and lock themselves. They'll start acting funny. They'll go out and lock themselves to a leaf of some sort, you know, right out in the open. A bird comes along and eats it. And these parasites are using the digestive process of whatever animal is eating it to go through its own life cycle. So there's an ant out there. There are snails. There's one for snails that does that shit.
Yep.
And
the snail one actually causes this really kind of cool, like, little light show on the antennae of the snail, to where it causes kind of a little, really cool shit.
Right. So, but when you're thinking about those kinds of parasites, I mean, we've got to talk about, you know, talk about evolution. You talk about this process where these things get more and more specialized, more and more direct in the way they affect things. And they affect larger and larger organisms. You know, how long will it be before eventually, or is there already a parasite, you know, out there that has some sort of psychoreactive effect on human beings?
I don't think there's any kind of government lab that would be willing to tell us whether or not they have done some kind of human trials for weaponizing certain parasites to cause a zombie-type effect. Who knows? Could happen.
Right. Well, the question about, you know, psychoactive parasites, right now there are parasites, you know, that we have, you know, we have different symbiotic relationships with different organisms and everything in our bodies as we are now. It's a normal, you know, status. But are we different mentally in our behavior because of those different those different things inside us? Well, we say no because it's the norm, but, you know, you gotta wonder. It's like, okay, if it wasn't E. coli, if it was something else, would we have a different kind of tendency?
Of course, also you could also look at the idea of mad cow disease, how that caused, you know, the joints to lock up, caused basically the cows to go apeshit.
Right. I think the film's, was it 28 Days Later?
Yeah.
That dealt with this idea that the zombie, as we know it, might not necessarily be a dead person brought back to life, although that technically is what qualifies as a zombie to me, which would mean that, you know, Christianity is a religion about a zombie. This idea that, you know, all it would take is a particular type of parasite that would change the way the mind works, and boost aggression and make people, you know, homicidal, basically, that you'd have the same thing. You'd have exactly the same thing going on. So it's, you know, it's a possibility. The possibility is out there.
Will it be in our lifetime? Probably not. I don't think it'll be in our lifetime. You know, I don't really want to come back after I'm dead personally, you know.
Right, yeah, and that's the thing. I don't see people coming back from the dead. You know, even though like Resident Evil, they took a good shot at it in the film where they talked about how this, you know, this particular agent or whatever takes the residual electrical charge of the brain and basically jump starts the body. I think even that is a bit of a stretch. That once you have brain death, and that's pretty much it. That you're not going to be able to bring that tissue back to life. But something else, some other kind of, you know, psychoactive, maddening agent could definitely cause the same kind of effect. And it could be infectious in the same way, a bite, a scratch, whatever.
Can you remember what it is? There actually is one particular chemical or a parasite, as you were, that actually causes brain death. And it only goes down as far as the brain stem. So basically it will still... well, maybe function. But, yeah, there's definitely one that actually keeps the brainstem going, which means the person could still technically be alive.
Wow.
Also, a lot of this work in the nano field, I'm kind of wondering what will come of that eventually as well.
There you go. Yeah, nanotechnology, nanobites or whatever, nanites or whatever going in, getting into the body and keeping the body functioning. Here's the thing I have where I take issue with something like that, where we start taking our dead and somehow keeping them alive and using them as soldiers or as a workforce or whatever, is that there are just too many people. What's
they're
that?
Just laying there. They're just laying there dead. Well, they're as well be useful.
Yeah, there's too many people. There's too many people for that to be practical. Why invest money into the technology to make those kinds of autonomous slaves when you've got, you know, living bodies running around that you can pay less to do, you know, do those same tasks.
People
talk about, what's that?
Living people feel pain. They cannot be used as bullet sponges. That's technically frowned upon.
But we do it anyways. I mean, we've been doing it for, you know, how many years in the Middle East and stuff like that. I mean, we do it anyways. And that's a whole other topic, really. The idea of, you know, why we send, you know, people to war. We have the technology, basically, where there's no reason to send people to war other than the moral reason, the
mm-hmm.
idea that this we're showing what we're willing to sacrifice in order to accomplish our ends. That and most of these weapon systems we send out, the autonomous robots, the Predator drones, things like that. And I actually was checking out a bunch of different very cool military robots that are, you know, just super effective in what they do, but they're very expensive. So when one of these things gets destroyed, you know, that's a problem. Whereas a dead dude's a dead dude no matter what, you know, so it's not worth very much to anybody. But getting back to zombies, the idea you mentioned this, the Haitian, this is where the zombie thing came from.
Yep.
Of course, you know, they have it in Africa. And in different regions of Africa, different means different things. Usually involves a reanimated corpse. Usually involves, you know, somebody from the dead being brought back to life by a sorcerer, you know, a Bokol or a Sabana or something like that, whatever, depending on the region, whatever it is. Then in Haiti, you got these people that are actually, you know, they actually do it by whatever means. And there's a lot of different discussion. I guess that... what is the guy's name? Wade Phillips, who wrote Serpent in the Rainbow, which has been discredited, by the way. But Wade Phillips comes out, and I'm pretty sure this guy's name, comes out basically, and he says he went to Haiti, and there was an author before him that actually went to Haiti, some woman, here it is, Zora Hurston, actually went to Haiti and claims that, you know, living around them and everything else, that she was aware of, you know, the zombie thing going on, but never found out what process was used to make these people come back from the dead. And then Wade Phillips finds this chemical process. He claims, you know, that there's this pharmaceutical that they produce, they manufacture, and this powder is absorbed in the bloodstream, and it creates the semblance of death.
I think the big kind of speculation was that it had to do with the puffer with a pufferfish toxin.
Right, the tetrodotoxin or whatever from a pufferfish,
yeah.
One of the deadliest poisons. That was part of the process, according to Wade Phillips, and that was a point where it was kind of controversial because most people that were experts in this kind of thing said, no, no, any amount that shit gets the bloodstream, you're pretty much done. And another author pointed to the cultural phenomenon, because if you live in this culture and live in this Haitian culture, you come up being fed this and you believe it. And if you believe it, if you believe in something enough, if somebody tells you, you know, you go through the trauma of being buried, you get kidnapped or whatever, you get abducted, and you get put in a box, and you're given some sort of, you know, shot or whatever, some sort of chemical that you can't move. Everybody's had those. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people have this experience in the evening where they have night paralysis, where
mm-hmm.
They wake up and they're conscious, but for whatever reason they can't get their body to move. So if you experience that kind of thing in a waking state where you've got this night paralysis going on, you can't move your body, but you're aware, you see this person that you know is a Bakor, you know he's a sorcerer or whatever, at least that's what you've been told around your village or whatever, and so you know what's going on because you've been taught this since you were a child. You are being turned into a zombie. So when you finally get loose, and there's a lot of other shit that happens to these people, you know, there's psychological abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, that goes on to basically break the will. So when you finally
yeah.
get cut loose, no doubt you believe that a part of your soul, the key component to who you are, is now so attached to a wristwatch that's being kept in a jar by this guy. What I find interesting about the whole Haitian culture's version of the zombie is that, I mean, let's face it, the Haitian culture is not a bastion of progress. It is not a hugely developed society culturally, okay? So there's not a whole hell of a lot going on in Haiti, okay? Technologically, you know, in any sense of the word, artistically or anything. They have wonderful artists. They have wonderful musicians. Don't get me wrong. They're just, I mean, there's nothing outstanding other than they have this deep and colorful and involved spiritual life.
Yes.
So that's what they have, okay? And it was taken from their ancestors in Africa. What I look at when I see all this, you know, as a student of these kinds of things, the cults and magic and things like that, is I see this as the remnants of a very, very advanced understanding of necromancy, okay?
Yes.
As a science. So that's what it suggests to me, that you've got these people who, you know, the necromancy, most of it involves, or a large part of it involves using bits of the dead to either learn secrets, to prophesize, to make things happen. This takes it a step beyond that, where instead of, you know, you have a skull or something like that, and you're using the skull to tell you where treasure's at, you have the whole body of the person that thinks they've been reanimated, that a piece of their spirit's been displaced. Because a large part, for me, magic is mostly about psychology, and mainly is fucking somebody else mentally, getting them convinced that you've got something going on, and then they do whatever it is you want you to do. They fulfill whatever prophecy you want fulfilled or whatever. What I find intriguing about the zombie in Haiti is, where did that come from? Because, it suggests a scientific process that is part of a civilization way older and way more developed than the people who are using it.
Yes. A lot of it also came, you have to also look at the films as well. The White Zombie, for instance, from the 20s and 30s. I mean, those were finally coming into the American culture that this was possible. That apparently some sorcerer could turn this, you know, gentleman over here into a zombie, or into at least a mindless drone. Part of me also has to wonder if maybe our fascination for it isn't so much the cannibalism, but more of the slavery kind of mindset still, you know what I mean?
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you got to think about
maybe
that culture. That was a huge thing, a huge evil to them was slavery. So the idea
yeah.
that someone could force you back into slavery, and it wasn't a matter of them, you know, using a gun and holding it to your head or threatening you with a sword or a whip or whatever. It was that they had a piece of your soul. I mean, these people also are, you know, extremely religious, so it's very important to them that their shit's in order so that when they face their judgment, you know, they get into heaven or they go to hell. And the idea that you're not, I mean, imagine this, man, that it is worse in their minds to be stuck on earth, corporal, in their physical form, in their flesh, because they can't die, instead of the possibility they might go to hell. But they would prefer that possibility, going to hell, than being on earth as a zombie.
What happened to that one black guy in Haiti who was really made a lot of stories in the 90s? He was apparently buried. He had the scars from one of the stakes, one of the nails piercing his flesh, all that kind of stuff. What happened with him anyways, do you know?
Clarius Narcisse, I think was the guy's name. Let's see. I'm jumping through my notes here. He was buried on May 2nd, 1962. His body was recovered. He was given a paste made from Datura, which is certain doses, has a hallucinogenic effect and causes memory loss. Apparently what they think happened, based on what this guy's story is that you get whatever injected into you, okay? Apparently he thinks that it was some sort of, you know, mix of tetrodotoxin, bufotoxin, a bunch of different venoms this guy was given and everything else. He dies. Okay, he pissed off some Bacor or whatever it was, and he was being made a zombie as a punishment. So when he comes to, he believes a piece of his soul has been taken away, because that's how he's been culturally programmed to believe it. And he's been given this paste that causes hallucinogenic effects and memory loss. And basically he's got, you know, he's this guy's, you know, slave. As long, imagine this, I mean, okay, and you can say that we see this in our own culture. You're in a drug stupor, and you're basically enslaved to your dealer. Or, you know, that was a tactic of pimps. You know, you keep these girls, you keep these prostitutes strung out. And that way, you know, they're always willing, they're always obedient, and they're always, you know, they got that going on. But part of what they think happened with this guy that was different is that he wasn't buried long enough. So he didn't suffer any brain damage from hypoxia, from being, you know, from lack of oxygen. So eventually he was able, you know, he kept his shit together, and eventually he got out from under it. The Bohr cord died. Apparently there was some, what it is here, he had a quarrel with his brother over some land or some shit. So when his brother died, the Bohr cord had died, then his brother died, he was finally able to, you know, go, okay, there's no reason for me to act like this anymore. And went back to his family. Yeah.
Nice. That's really one of the biggest cases I can think of within Haitian culture that actually, maybe some people say that was a zombie, or at least a zombie-type person, I guess you could say. That's really the only one I can really think of, at least within, you know, the last 40, 50 years.
Well, that was it's the most famous case. I mean, how much information comes from us from Haiti about what's going on down there?
That's true, too.
I think it's crazy. I mean, you look at Haiti and the Dominican Republic. They're on the same goddamn island, okay? And there's no difference between these two, between geographically, there's no difference between these two countries. They're on the same island in the same, you know, the same temperature, the same weather. If it rains in the fucking Dominican Republic, it's raining in Haiti. That's the way it works, okay? The earthquake in Haiti, they felt it in the Dominican Republic. In the Dominican Republic, because they don't have the dictatorship they have, they don't have the kind of backwards cultural thing going on. It's not a matter of power and terror, and that's how the culture is defined. When the earthquake hit, they were fine. They put their knickknacks back up on the shelf. They picked their TV up off the living room floor, and they went back to life as usual. You know, well, in Haiti, the mudslides took out all the mud huts and everything else, right? And they're struggling. Okay, and who knew? Who here knew? I mean, we hear about, you know, oh, yeah, Haiti sucks. You know, the things going on in Haiti sucks. But nobody here had any clue how bad it was. You know, really, how ridiculous the conditions were right here in our own hemisphere. I mean, this is the wealthiest hemisphere on the earth. You know, all the money's here. And we've got, you know, this country here where, yeah, there's still people that are still a dictator that controls things with guns. And I'm not saying that the United States is any better. It's just that it's nice for us to pretend that the guns aren't pointing at our heads. Where in Haiti,
yes,
they know it for
sneaky.
Sure if the guns are pointing at their
heads.
Yeah.
Well, shit,
so,
it's kind of the same thing with down south in South America, Rio. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful, you know, nice, beautiful resort community. Nice, a lot of rich people living out on the beaches. And you look on the hill behind it all, and nothing but slums, you know? Same principle,
right? Right, right. And a lot of these cultures, there is no middle class, which is where we're going. So just hang on tight. America will be there in about another 10 years, and we'll get to all experience that.
Now, what did you think about the Walking Dead series?
I have yet to see any of the Walking Dead series. I tuned out from television years ago. So I've heard of the Walking Dead series. I know it's a huge thing. I know people are really digging it. There is a place here in Austin called it's the Museum of the Weird. And if you read my blogs and everything else, you've seen actually pictures of me and the kids going through the Museum of the Weird. They have a little theater set up in the back section of this museum. So imagine this. It's the premiere night of the latest episode of Walking Dead, because that's what they're doing. So it's the latest episode or whatever, and you're going to go see the latest episode of The Walking Dead with 30 other fans, okay? And to get there, you've got to walk through a hallway that is filled with mummified bodies and animals, sheep with two heads, wax sculptures of the Boris Karloff Frankenstein and the Bela Lugosi Dracula. You go all the way, but there's an actual sarcophagus back there. Fiji mermaids. You walk through all this just amazing sideshow stuff. You walk around I'm not sure what they call. It's not a lizard cage. I don't know if atrium is the right word, but there's a spiral staircase that goes around this. It's basically a little area where they keep. They have some great big iguanas and grilled lizards and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's very.
So you get all the way up. Yeah, you get all the way upstairs to the theater, which is like three stories up. And you walk into this theater, and they have. It is, from what I understand, there's a picture of this in the. On my blog, and I don't have the blog link in front of me, but there's a picture of this, me and Vanessa and I standing in front of this. It is this giant King Kong, all right? The head and the hands and everything else, that's the back wall. And it's not painted. It is an actual, you know, three-dimensional sculpture of this massive, from the original black and white film, King Kong. And the terrors are all seated in front of that King Kong. And then there's the stage where you see the Walking Dead on the big screen. They have a great big screen, big television.
That's freaking
that's
awesome.
The way to watch it. Yeah, if I go to watch The Walking Dead, I will go to watch it that way. But I've yet to do that. I've yet to actually see it.
Oh, you have to, man. The series actually turned out very well. I've read comic books personally. Kind of old school in that regard. But the series turned out great. Comic books are absolutely amazing.
Right on.
And the worst thing for me is I was reading the comic books quite a while before the actual series came out, so
yeah,
it kind of was ruined for me. That's yeah.
right on. The last television series we actually watched, and my girlfriend's a huge fan, so she went out and got the DVD set, was Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I like that one.
So that's as far as we've gotten into television was Game of Thrones. We were talking about the possible reality of a zombie apocalypse or a zombie kind of thing going on, and television it makes me think of this as well. So I wanted to roll this by you. Is it possible, could you sit there and say that we might be actually living in a zombie culture where people are desensitized, where people are taught not to react, where people, you know, basically go do whatever task they've been trained to go do and then go back to wherever they go. Not cannibalistic zombies, but we're talking about people being controlled by people without having any really real awareness of themselves or what's going on. It might be a little bit deep for the ooze, but in my opinion, I think I see that happening.
Let me see every day when you're looking at your major cities, for instance, hell, the closest one to me is New York City. You see people every single day. Whether it be at 5 or 6 o'clock walking down the streets, all of them in herded masses walking to whatever day job they're going to do and to punch in, punch out, and go home. And they sit at home, they watch a little bit of TV, they screw the same woman every night, and they basically just live. Well, or exist, I should say.
If you call that living, yeah. Romero makes that
call
point. In Dawn of the Dead, Romero makes that point. That, you know, when they actually go to the mall and they barricade the mall or whatever, and these zombies don't know they're in there at this point. They're just walking up to the doors of the mall, or when they walk into the mall, they're zombies just wandering around the mall. Just, you know, what's that?
That was more of the condemning of the 70s, you know, culture after the 60s, man, because everyone just basically became nice and pacified after that, you know. The government stepped
right.
back in, the police stepped back in, yeah.
It was saying basically that these people, this is what they did. This is all they did with their lives. So this, you know, what else did they have? So in some rudimentary level, they continue to do it. You know, this is how they existed, was just wandering. Just, you know, pointlessly, you know, this is how they filled their time.
Yeah, it's
so,
kind of
right
sad
on.
To see that even today as well. Nothing's really changed since then, has it?
No, not much. Not much as far as that's concerned. there's plenty of people that, you know, like when you talk about a production like Game of Thrones, The Walking Dead, these series, where it's there's some artistic merit to it, in my opinion. And I'm a snob,
yeah.
So, you know, anybody listening to this that goes, oh, you know, well, when I talk shit about Friends, when I talk shit about American Idol or anything else.
They were shit. Oh, sorry.
You know, when I talk shit about any of that other, you know, kind of pop culture bubblegum crap, somebody can make the same argument, I'm sure, about Walking Dead or Game of Thrones or whatever.
See, the reason why they're so good is because actually they really bring you in. They're immersive. I mean, I don't get really kind of entranced by seeing some fat white kids sing some shitty song. What the fuck? No. I like watching these parent survivors walking around with zombies trying to kill them. Or watching this feudal-type combat in Game of Thrones where people are probably going to die very bloody and horribly. It's that there's an element where you're actually being drawn into the story, actually are caring about the characters in it, which is really why it's so popular and really good.
Well, and like you said about the immersion, I think it also causes you to, it stimulates some thought within you. You know, what would you do? How would you deal with it? You find yourself going through the story as one of the
yes.
characters. You might not necessarily be, you know, Jon Snow or whoever in the story, but you place yourself among them, among these characters. So their dilemmas are your dilemmas. It's an escape. Whereas American Idol, you know, the fat kid's really got some pipes on him. Well, I hope he gets some votes. Or Friends, you know, that chick, she lost her shoes. Henry Rollins, you know, he pointed this out. He does some traveling. He said he didn't watch a lot of TV, but he did some traveling. When he does some traveling, he turns on the TV just to see what people are watching, see what's going on. And catches this episode of Friends, and he's thinking to himself, here are these good-looking these hot chicks all living in this building together, all seeing each other
yep.
and everything else. They're,
yep, and
they're
not
hot.
A pair of pits anywhere. Yep.
Right, tight shirts and everything else. And you got these guys who, you know, were good-looking guys, you know, there's nothing wrong with these guys or anything like that. And they get together, and, you know, the dilemma for these people is that, oh, no, Stacy doesn't have shoes to go with her dress, and her mother's coming. What's she going to do? Oh, no. So Stacy and the girls run off to get some shoes, and the guys are standing there going, boy, I hope Stacy gets some shoes. Wow, I hope, you know. And Hank Rollins is talking about, no, if he was in the room, he'd be like, damn, did you see the tits on that one? Oh, my God, what I would do to that, you know, that kind of thing, right? And he's like, he knows the chicks he knows we're talking about, I could totally see his dick print this time, you know, that kind of thing. So it's so withdrawn from reality. And what's sad is that you got shows like, I mean, Game of Thrones is set in a fantasy environment. Walking Dead is science fiction, basically. But
yep.
the drama, the human drama, has more validity to it. It's more real than the bubblegum crap that's out there.
Yes, I completely agree, actually. I also got into a lot of Spartacus as well back in the day.
Right on.
Lucy Lawless,
I know,
nice
of it.
Tits, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I know of it. I heard there was one that was it was about the Roman Empire. Might even
yeah,
have been called Rome.
Yeah,
right.
I remember seeing that as well, yeah.
I'm not, and I knew of them, but never actually watched them. Shame on me. Just because I don't know, we just don't watch television. We're snobs like that, I guess. That's why I think it's hilarious. When we tell people, no, I didn't see it. We just don't watch television. We don't have time. We're engaged in other things. We read. We talk to people like that. We get out there and get involved. You're a snob. That's the reaction. You're
really?
A snob. You're an intellectual snob. Oh yeah, my girlfriend gets it all the time. She has a regular fucking job. She's a human resources manager at a small company here in Austin.
Yeah.
And but 100 some employees. But yeah, she gets it all the time. When she was working in accounts receivable for that company, she was the hens would get together and they would, oh, did you see American Idol last night? And Jamie, what did you think of the American Idol last night? And she would go, American Idol, fuck, I don't watch that shit. I don't know what you're talking about. I saw on the news last night that Obama's getting ready to fuck us on this whole healthcare thing or whatever. And she voted for the guy.
Dude, I really think everyone voted on the whole Obama thing. I think really the reason why everyone voted for him is to try to prove they aren't racist. That's why they voted for him, man. It was nothing. It had nothing to do with policies. It was to prove that we are no longer racist as a society. That's all it was.
Wanda Sykes pointed out that the reason that the people voted for Obama is because there was no money left anyways. So since there was no money left anyways, fuck it, let a black guy handle it, because I mean, how much more fucked up could it get? I think there was a good piece of that. Maybe not to say I don't want to be considered a racist, so I'm going to vote for a black guy, but maybe to sit there and say, for the last 43 attempts, we've had a white guy in the office, and maybe it is time for something different. And here's a guy that looks different, so more than likely he'll do something different. My thing is, I turn off the screen and just listen to him talk, just listen to him speak. He sounds just like the last 43 white guys, that we've got. Well, of the ones we have audio recordings of, he sounds like every other politician out there. Except he was more ambiguous. He was even more ambiguous, even more a politician than other politicians, which is why I didn't vote for him.
But, I didn't vote. Yeah, so I didn't vote.
Right,
I voted
there you
this
go.
Election, but yeah.
There you go. It's going to be fucked up. More and more people choose not to vote. Eventually, three people in the United States will decide who the president is. They'll be on
CNN. And know what's
going
to happen, man? And when the rest of the nation finds these three idiots who put another idiot into power for whatever stupid, inane reason they had, we're going to lynch them. And there'll be no one.
They'll be on CNN, though. The guy standing there, he's got a baseball cap on that says, "Who farted?" So why did you vote for President? Well, I vote for President X because I think he's the best thing for this country, and he promised me health care and everything else, and I'm unemployed and everything, and I got these 15 kids by five different wives, and I figure, they need some dental work and stuff. So then the next guy is, I want to take the America down. That's why I voted for this guy and that kind of shit. And then the chick,
I'm worried about my ovaries and stuff. And he promised that he would make sure my ovaries are gift wrapped. So that's why I voted for him.
Yeah. Those are the three people who are going to decide who's president of the United States. So we're at the last minute. I would highly recommend there's a Saturday show coming up and a Sunday show. For our loyal listeners of the U's, if you haven't listened to a live episode, if you listen to the archive episodes, I would definitely listen to the show this weekend because there might be something coming down the pipe. Saturday, Primus Mano at, I think it's at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and the Outbreak Edition on Sunday at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Check those shows out. But we're out, man. We're out of time.
Hey,
so
man. Later.
Have a good one.
Yeah.
Later.
Okay, have a great one.